Welcome to Breakthrough Success. I'm your host, Mark Roberti, the content marketing expert, bringing you 5 new episodes every week where I and top-level guests teach you how to take your business to the next level and achieve your breakthrough. Hello, Breakthrough Success listeners. I just wanted you all to know before the episode actually starts, I've been working a little bit behind the scenes to give you something really special. So a while ago, I wrote my book, Content Marketing Secrets, which helps people create, promote, and optimize their content for growth and revenue. And I just put the finishing touches together to offer that for free to anyone who is interested. So if you want your free copy of Content Marketing Secrets, all you have to do is head over to markgoberti.com/book. Now, let's jump right into the episode. One of the things that we really like to do as content creators is create as much content as possible. And while it comes in the form of blog posts and videos, it also comes in the form of products like training courses, services, and books. But we can't just keep creating products and expect customers to go to them. And one of the ways that we get sales for our products and build these standout type of brands is to understand our customers' lingo. So that's what we're going to focus on in this episode. So who do we have today as our guest? Well, he's a business coach, speaker, and author. He's a visionary and strategic thinker who encourages others to follow a quest that is bigger than they can imagine. And following that quest with a focus also on measurable action steps so that the quest can become a reality. His latest book, Lingo, teaches readers how they can discover their ideal customer's secret language and make their businesses irresistible. Today's guest for episode 228 of the Breakthrough Success Podcast is none other than Jeffrey Shaw. Jeffrey, it is such a pleasure to have you on the show.
And Mark, I'm thrilled to be here with you. Thank you.
Jeff, I'm really looking forward to this interview. But before we dive in, just for some background, Jeffrey was the very first person to ever be on the show. He is episode 1. So there is a big difference between how I was during episode 1 versus how I am now. So anyone who wants to see that episode, that will be in the show notes. But now I'd like to get some backstory, a little bit more on you and your journey for making it easier for us to understand our customers' lingo, being able to communicate with them. So can you just give us some background as to why you decided to write the book Lingo and just a few things about it?
Sure. Well, you know, Mark, as you know, or you certainly, you know already, and yet you're so young, but you with so much experience that you have, and what you'll continue to learn is that being in business is a series of breakthroughs, right? It's just one after another, you know, breakthrough moments and breakthrough transitions in our business. So Lingo is actually based on a breakthrough moment for myself 30 years ago. And what I like to say is that it's an old story, but it's more relevant today than ever. It just took me 30 years to see the value in it, honestly. And it was kind of pulled out of me by my editor in a conversation with who became my editor. She wasn't my editor at the time. But when I really got down to the nitty gritty of talking to her about how I built a successful photography business 33 years ago, when I shared with her what I did, she's like, now that's the book you need to write. So it is predicated on a breakthrough, a single breakthrough moment that became then a series of small breakthrough moments that leads to one big breakthrough. So let me see if I can break this down. So 20 years old, I go off to photography school and I come back to my hometown in upstate New York, or what we consider upstate New York, about 2 hours north of New York City. And I try to start a family portrait photography business, which I consider to be upscale, meaning I was going to charge a maximum amount of money because I put a very high value on what it means to have photographs of your family and to hand them down. So I go back to this little hometown and struggle for 3 years to get anybody to buy what I was saying. And in fact, nobody was buying it. And like a lot of entrepreneurs, you know, I got my hustle on, right? Almost to a detriment, because I started doing photographing dance contests at for radio shows, you know, basically getting anybody in front of my camera as I could. and realizing, man, this is a terrible business model because I'm running around chasing my tail. I'm not getting anywhere and I'm not doing the work I want. What I wanted to do is photograph families on location and children and do beautiful large scale portraits, and wasn't getting many opportunities to do that. Could not understanding why. And then a woman comes in, and this, Mark, was one of the key breakthrough moments. A woman comes in to talk to me about my photography. I made my best pitch possible. She looks at me and she said, well, that sounds great and all, but I don't know how I'm paying for my rent this month. I don't have the luxury of worrying about my children's memories, meaning the photographs that she would buy. And that was an absolute breakthrough for me, because it told me, one, I had never considered what I did a luxury product. I thought everybody should have photographs. But no, it is a luxury product. If you can't afford, if your choice is between food and photographs, you're not going to choose photographs, right? So, and I realized I was literally speaking the wrong language, because I'm trying to promote the lingo of the importance of long-term thinking to a community he's only worried about today. And that was a huge breakthrough for me. One, that I was speaking the wrong lingo, and two, I was a luxury product and I therefore needed to serve a luxury market. That put me on a quest for 3 months to figure out the lingo of the affluent luxury market. And I did. I spent 3 months, completely rebranded my business, moved it from New York to Connecticut, still doing what I most wanted to do, which was to photograph families and children on location and do beautiful fine art photography. But in this community, in an area that could afford luxury, I was speaking their lingo, right? I was speaking the lingo of planning ahead and preserving moments and high quality and all those things. Everything I said made sense to them, where it made no sense to where I came from. Getting that was the biggest breakthrough of my life, because in 1 year, my business multiplied 5 times and put me on a trajectory for the next 33 years of business. So, you know, it's one breakthrough, one little breakthrough after another can lead to a major life through breakthrough, as far as I'm concerned.
And I really like that idea, like when you hit your breakthrough, there's just more breakthroughs coming along the way. So you could always like set like bigger goals for yourself. But it's really interesting how you mentioned that one occurrence where you met the person who said, like, I'm just trying to afford my rent. That changed your marketing completely. That changed who you reached out to. And you were speaking a language where, like, it was a luxury brand, a luxury type of service, but you were speaking to the wrong crowd. So, like, I think that story alone just captures how powerful it is to speak the same language as our customers. And like, some of us are speaking like a language for a certain customer, but in your case, in the beginning, reaching out to the wrong type of customer. So how can we learn to, like, we have the language that we're speaking, we have the lingo, how can we find the right people to speak it to so that they receive the message?
Yeah, it is, honestly, Mark, it's the biggest gap in business. You know, serving entrepreneurs as a coach and consultant is one of the biggest gaps I see. People come to me and, you know, if they even understand who their ideal customer is, and quite honestly, it's usually step number one, is getting clarity on defining who your ideal customer is. So that's step number one, which a lot of people think they know, but they don't really know. And then they put all these assumptions. Well, I know who my ideal customer is. I've done a buyer persona. I've done an avatar. And they've laid all these assumptions on them, right? But they haven't done what I think is the real work, which is to walk several miles in their shoes, right? I was a lower middle class kid. What did I know about the affluent people? But what I did have was a willingness to understand the world from their perspective, to walk in their shoes, to go to the brands where they shopped, to read the magazines that they were reading, to go to the blogs that were comfortable for them. I did all that work so that I could understand, what does the world look like? And it all comes down to what I call emotional triggers, Mark. What are the emotional triggers that you need to trip, you know, for your ideal customer, whomever they may be? That's how you speak their lingo, because it's, and this is, I think, the fun part about lingo, is that it's actually quite unspoken, right? Because you're, by you communicating in a way that's meaningful to your ideal customer, you're emotionally kind of tripping their emotions and getting them to respond. So step number one is you have to get clear on who your ideal customer is. That's imperative, so that you're then building your business and building your brand messaging, the brand image, and your services, everything, content creation, you're then building everything with a clear, empathetic understanding of your ideal customer, which makes them feel like, wow, this business, this brand really gets me and is speaking my lingo. And in the book, I teach a five-step strategy, if you will, which, you know, when you're ready to, we can go into that as well.
And I'm wondering if we could just go right into that five-step sure. strategy, because like I know it's in the book, but just if you could provide a brief overview of it for us.
Yeah, let me just give you a brief overview, because I want everybody to kind of walk away with action steps that they can take, or at least an understanding that what's most important is they walk away feeling like there's an understanding that the steps they can take will make sense, because I feel like a lot of what I have to offer is contradictory to what a lot of people have heard. And here's why I think it is. I'm not formally educated in marketing and branding. What I teach is real entrepreneurial experience. Right, because I've been an entrepreneur for 33 years. So I do speak the lingo of your audience, right? And that's the key, right? I'm not coming at you with, you know, a list of degrees and no, this is real entrepreneur experience, but how you can build a business where your goal is to only work with your ideal, most profitable customers and create the content that resonates for them. So the five steps of the secret language strategy is step number one, I already touched on it, is perspective. You have to understand the perspective of the people you're building a business and writing content for, right? And this is so backwards from the way most people build a business, because the first thing they do when they go into business is they launch a website and they fill it up with a bunch of words and information that isn't actually speaking to the right audience. And then they wonder why they're getting the wrong customers. Right. So step number one is perspective. You have to do your homework to understand not the demographic, not the statistics, not the buyer persona, not the avatar. Do you understand the emotions, the lifestyle, the values and priorities of the people you want to build a business for? Okay, so that's step number one. Step number two, one of the strongest emotional human triggers that we have is familiarity. We as humans are strongly drawn to what feels familiar to us. Doesn't mean it's a copy. Doesn't mean it's exactly like anything else. But it has a comfort to it, because familiarity lets us know we're in the right place, right? And this is very important when it comes to marketing, because, you know, if you're someone who's comfortable in Home Depot, that's your place. If you're someone who's comfortable in a high-end shopping environment, that's your place, right? But you know, we're often not comfortable in both places, right? If you actually watch the shopping patterns of one example I use in the book, and when I work directly with coaching clients, is grocery stores, right? There are some people that are comfortable in Whole Foods and some that are comfortable in Costco. You won't find too many people that are comfortable in both atmospheres, right? So familiarity is really important. So the more you understand the perspective, because familiarity is a deeply emotional experience. So when you understand the perspective of your ideal customer, you then can create services, policies, the look, the feel of your online assets, your content, whether it's, you know, humorous, whether it's formal, you can create everything for your business in a way that it feels familiar based on the patterns and lifestyle and values of your ideal customer. Okay, so we have perspective, we have familiarity. Next is style. Really important today, because style is the quick decision maker. We make decisions. We as consumers make decisions every day, practically instantly, on whether we feel like the style of something resonates for us, right? So in a world of very short attention span, your content, your website, your emails, everything that we're putting out in the way of content, our potential customers are evaluating, judging whether to open that email, whether to stay on your website in 9 seconds or less. Right. So what, and based on what do they make that decision? It's an immediate feeling as to whether the style of this website suits me. Right. If the subject line of the email resonates for me, is it in my style? So for example, if you're trying to reach an audience that, you know, is conservative or formal, well, then, you know, catchy headlines with, you know, asterisks replacing curse words in it probably isn't going to feel like their style. You know, a comparison, a metaphor I offer in the book is, if you ever shop, Mark, at like a TJ Maxx, where there's a variety of designers in one sized section. So let's say you're, you know, looking in the smalls, you flip through those hangers looking for a shirt, and what makes you stop? Right? What makes you stop is, wow, that feels like it's my style. That's a style of shirt I would wear. Style is a quick decision maker and really important in a world of such short attention span, that your ideal customer feel like you are presenting your business and your brand in a style that already suits them. All right, so next is pricing psychology. Hardly anything is more powerful, and I find a lot of entrepreneurs want to stay away from pricing, right? They shy away from it, and yet it's the most powerful tool you have to position your business exactly in where in the market it belongs to reach your ideal customers. Because pricing creates perception and is in your power to decide, how do you want your business to be perceived? Do you want your business to be perceived as cost conscious? Do you want your business to be perceived as high end? Do you want your business to be perceived as easily accessible or exclusive? It's your choice. But what we do know, Mark, and I'm sure you've experienced this too, we make judgments all the time whether to do a business with a business or a brand based on the price point. And even how the prices look, right? There's a certain, you know, obviously you get a certain perception of a restaurant if there's no prices on the menu. And you get a different perception at McDonald's when it's a dollar meal. This is one of the biggest breaks. I cannot tell you, Mark, how many entrepreneurs come to me frustrated that they're not working with their ideal customers, the most profitable customers. They tend to be higher end, or they're complaining their customers are trying to talk them down and ask for discounts. And I'll look at their pricing structure, and all those online courses they've created are all $197, $497, $997, right? Because this is what we see in online marketing all the time. But let me ask you this. If you're going to draw attention to the fact that $3 matters, that $497 is more clever than $500, then how can you complain about people trying to nickel and dime you? Right? This is one of the biggest lessons I learned when I started studying the difference between a high end and a low end market. Walmart, that's the way Walmart prices their products. And that's why Walmart attracts a cost conscious customer. You go into a high end store, the prices are all round off. It's not $497, it's $500. Right? So again, it's actually in the business owners, the founders' control to decide how they want their business to be perceived and then price accordingly, aligned with the psychology of your ideal customer. And then the last of the five steps is words. It's only at the last stage can you then speak their lingo. Too many businesses come out of the gate, go into business, they think they know everything about their ideal customer, they put everything out there, and then they wonder why their business isn't working. It's because they didn't do the four steps first. It's not until you understand your ideal customer's perspective, what triggers the emotion of familiarity, what causes them to make quick decisions based on style, and that you've positioned your business aligned with their pricing priorities, it's only then can you speak their lingo and use the right, you know, craft the right words, the right emails, the right content, the right blog posts. It's only then can you do that as a final stage to speak the lingo of your ideal customers. I hope that was helpful, Mark.
Jeffrey, thank you for providing us that five-step framework. And there's a lot in there, a lot that your business can do to further communicate in the same lingo as your customers. But one of the things that I want to ask you, and this comes from a book that I read a while back called Brick by Brick. Basically, one of the things in that book is that Lego like almost went out of business because they had the lingo down, but then they decided to expand and create more and different kinds of products. And the way they expanded, they lost the lingo that they had with their customers. So my question to you is, how can we continue to expand, pursue new projects, new products, things like that, without losing the current relationship we have with our existing core customers?
Mm-hmm. It's a great question. First of all, and I do talk about expansion in Lingo from the perspective of what has been referred to as find a niche. Right. I'm more along the philosophy of ditching the niche, right? Or at least redefining it. And what I, the way I redefine the idea of a niche, I just think having a narrow niche nowadays is a dangerous business model. I think there's a different way, right? So because a niche traditionally has meant find one thing to do to one audience of people. What I think you can do is if your niche should be your lingo, your niche should be your area of expertise, right? Your niche should be the ideal customer whose lingo you're speaking. But here's the key, and here's where it's expansive. When you are known for a certain area of expertise, you mentioned Lego, right? If they would have to get clear on their area of expertise, which I would say is around the area of fun, right? That's kind of their area of expertise. It doesn't mean the only thing that they can do is build toys for children. Right. That's why they expand into an amusement park. And, you know, and if I were to dig in deeper and work with our management team, I'll bet there's more to, I mean, fun in itself is too broad because there are hundreds of thousands and millions of businesses whose area of expertise might be fun. But what is Lego fun? Right. It's one of the things I talk about in the book is what is the unique perspective of your business or brand that you bring to the table that's different. Right. So I'd want to know what is the unique, it's not value proposition, but perspective. What is the unique perspective about fun that is probably in the story as to why Lego was created in the first place? When you become clear on that, you then are able to imagine multiple audiences and multiple things that you can do with your area of expertise without losing that core lingo, right? But realizing also, you know, if you're, I guess an example would be baby boomers, right? A lot of us, I'm actually the last year of the baby boomer generation. 1964 is my year of birth, and that's the last year considered of the baby boomers. But nonetheless, I grew up on Legos, right? The lingo, then you sometimes have to morph your lingo because those baby boomers are now grandparents, right? So who's making the decision? If the grandparents are the initiators of bringing their grandchildren, if that turns out to be a primary market for Lego as a company, for grandparents to inspire the purchase of Legos and to bring them to a Lego amusement park, et cetera, then it's a different lingo. Right? A little bit of a nostalgia, but yet kids still love Legos, and you'd have to figure out what, you know, so lingos can morph and change as the market does as well. But it's being clear that you're speaking the right lingo to the right audience that matters.
Jeffrey, I really like that take on morphing your lingo because as different things change, like culture and things like that. And as you mentioned, like generation class, like they get older, like the lingo does change. And just to like further talk about Lego, and then we'll jump ship and go somewhere else. But like Lego is now going into like board games that you create on your own with Lego pieces, and they have moved like the Lego movie as well. So they are thinking of more ways to spread what Jeffrey pointed out as Lego's version of fun versus another brand's version of fun. So it is very interesting to see how they have this core message, this core niche that they are in, and just spreading that message. And one of the things that I also want to ask you in this episode is, like one of the things that we all want to build is a community around our brand. So I'm wondering if you could talk about how it can build a sense of community around our message and around what we're doing. Mm-hmm.
So I actually encourage entrepreneurs and businesses to look at their business as building a community instead of a business. Right? Because if you're building a business, which the ultimate goal, by the way, of Lingo as a concept and as a book, the ultimate goal I want for entrepreneurs is for them to work almost entirely with their ideal customers. And I refer to this in the book as busting up the Pareto principle. The Pareto principle is the 80-20 rule, which states that 80% of your business comes from 20% of your customers. It's mathematically true in many, many different areas of life and business, but it's a bad philosophy in business because what it's really saying is that 8 out of 10 customers are a waste of your time. And in today's world, talk about things morphing and changing. You know, we don't have, it's just that much, it's so much noisier. There's so many more choices. We're no longer even compared to apples to apples. So there's just, it's so difficult to get noticed and to stand out that I don't know any business that can afford to waste their time on an 8 out of 10 customers. We need all of them to matter. So the goal of Lingo is to build a business where you are attracting, you know, your ideal customers all the time. So it is a community, right? So if you look at, you are going to only serve your ideal customer, then you in fact are building a community and treat them as such. So for example, if you look at something I did, a strategic move I made in my business recently, small move, but it's made a big impact, was with regards to my email marketing. I typically, or in the past, I did not include my friends on my email list because, you know, my friends aren't going to become buyers. You know, your friends are the first ones to make fun of you about things you put in your email. You know, just it's a different lingo, right? You talk to your friends differently. So my friends might somewhere along the way have opted into my CRM, but I tagged them in a way that they wouldn't get my emails. Then I realized several months ago, I had a kind of an aha moment of realizing that if I'm building my business in the principles of a community, then I should include my friends because everybody in my business should be thought of as a friend and part of the community. And by having my friends on my list, it has raised my level of consciousness about how often I email and what I say. Because if it's not going to pass the friend test, then it doesn't pass the test of, you know, everybody else I'm emailing either. So for example, frequency, right? A lot of us worry about, are we emailing too frequently? Well, if you're emailing so frequently that you're annoying your friends, then you're annoying your community, your customers. But on the same hand, if you're not emailing often enough, like a friend might say, hey, am I no longer on the A-list? Have I been bumped? And that's exactly what your customers would feel like, right? So I have found actually having my friends on my email list recently puts my mindset more into that I'm building a business. And I think speaking the lingo of your ideal customers is one of your best strategies for building a community, because that's exactly what lingos are. I mean, teenagers have a lingo, right? Teenagers have a lingo so that their parents don't always understand everything they're saying. Texting has a lingo, right? Some shortcuts, right? Not everybody always understands. There's always slang. Slang is a lingo. And communities of people, whether they're teenagers or cultures, have always created a slang, a lingo, that kind of becomes the in language of that community. So lingo in itself is a tremendous community builder.
I really like the idea of adding friends to your email list because it does, I mean, as you mentioned, make you a lot more conscious of how many emails you're sending, what kind of emails you're sending, and in that whole bigger picture, viewing everyone who joins your community as a friend versus as another subscriber on your list, another follower, or something like that. So I really like that.
And I'll add to that, Mark, your friends, I'll add to that just as far as content creation. Same thing with blog posts, too. The value of having your friends reading this, because if it doesn't sound like you to them, then you're being someone else in your business, right? And a lot of us battle that. You know, we have a certain, whether it's a professional facade or, you know, I know for like one of my biggest challenges in writing the book Lingo is I tend to write very grandiose. Like I sound like some pompous jerk in the way I write, right? But that's not how I show up on my podcast. Right, so one of the most important things for me and communicated to my editor all the time was that I want the book to feel like the who people know me to be on my podcast. And that's been the ultimate compliment. People emailing me or messaging me and saying, gosh, reading your book is exactly like listening to you on your podcast. Similar cadence, similar warped sense of humor, right? That's the value. If your friends don't feel like, you know, in reading your emails and in reading your content, if your friends don't think it sounds like you, then you're not being your authentic self to your community.
Jeffrey, thank you for that add-on. And I really like that idea of just like having the same sound, having the same personality throughout all of your content, which is not as easy as it sounds actually, because you could write one way and do podcasts the other way. So if you're able to merge that together, that's something that is really powerful. Definitely one of those like underrated things to do for your content brand. And one of the things I want to ask, like so far I've been talking about like ways to build up the lingo, ways to get people to like who hear the lingo, who are customers. But on the other side, there are some businesses, some people building communities that they don't have the lingo down. And I'm wondering, what do you believe holds most people back from having that lingo and the customers who are listening very actively to that lingo?
You know, Mark, another great question. It's and I'm glad to encourage people to look at it. Like, what holds people back? First of all, I just lingo in itself, I think, is a pretty groundbreaking concept, right? Or I wouldn't have written a book about it. And part of it, the reason I wrote the book is it comes from, you know, as often things do, it comes from my own frustration. And my frustration has been that I think, you know, a lot of us in business, I'd say most people in business today, are really innovative and creative. We live in a time where there's been, you know, I just think we have more unique businesses and the opportunity to create unusual businesses unlike any other time, right? So the problem is the world around us is still pretty conventional in its business practices. So a lot of us are, as entrepreneurs, we find ourselves feeling kind of lost because the world does business this way, but it doesn't really make sense for us. And we try these things. And then, of course, there's just the recirculation of advice all the time. And it, I don't know, I just find the world of business just keeps regurgitating the same old advice over and over and over again. And I just, my frustration comes from feeling like, but it's not speaking to me, right? I'm what I refer to as an uncommon entrepreneur. Right. What I do as a photographer, this is what I do. The people I serve, this is not what other photographers did. So, you know, volume discounts and so many of the other cheesy things that photographers do didn't work for me. Right. And I think there's a lot of us in that. So one is I just think just getting the idea of what we're talking about here, that speaking the lingo of your ideal customers is really understanding your ideal customers' values, like their life values, their priorities, right? Are they cost conscious or are they time conscious, right? One of the examples I offer in the book is IKEA, which I love as a brand because it's so clear, right? IKEA is not speaking the lingo of time saving. Right? It's such a long, drawn-out process. You can spend the entire afternoon at IKEA. So if you're someone that is time-conscious, lingo as IKEA is not the brand for you, right? But if you're someone that loves the satisfaction of building things yourself and doing it yourself, then IKEA is awesome for you. They're speaking your lingo, right? I'm a very time-conscious guy. I am drawn to businesses and, in fact, will pay a premium price for somebody to get things done for me in a shorter period of time, right? So, you know, I think what holds a lot of people back is just, first and foremost, just not understanding that there's a different way of being in business, and they just keep following the same regurgitated advice and doing things the same old way. And that's becoming harder and harder today because, you know, I work primarily with service-based businesses, and one of the biggest struggles I see with service-based businesses is that they feel like they're being turned into a commodity by a public who thinks that every photographer is the same, every accountant is the same, every plumber, whatever service-based business you're in, we're being grouped together as, and in a way, it's our own darn fault, right? The way we stand out now is by understanding our clients more deeply than everybody else in our competitive field so that we can stand out and draw forward our ideal customer.
Jeffrey, thank you for sharing with us those insights. And it's really interesting how you mentioned that. A lot of it does come down to us not understanding the customer and how we have a bunch of different preferences and being able to determine those preferences. Like, are you time conscious? Are you a little more relaxed with your time and things like that? I mean, that's just one example. Like all that matters when we're getting an idea of who we are creating the lingo for. So Thank you for those insights. And one of the questions that I also want to tackle is, I'm wondering if you could share with us one big challenge you faced while crafting your lingo, while figuring all of it out, how you're going to communicate with the people in your community, and a powerful lesson you learned during that challenge.
Yeah, for me, and I think for most of us, the biggest challenge for me was I didn't currently walk the same path as the people I was meant to serve, right? So again, as I said earlier, I was a lower middle class kid, but I realized that I had the attitudes, the mindset, and what I had to offer as a service was better fit for an affluent clientele. The problem was I knew nothing about affluence, right? I didn't at the time. I think the biggest challenge for any of us, and I think this is particularly in a service-based business, we are almost always serving people that are not exactly like us. So, for example, if you're in a service-based business, there's a really good chance that your ideal customer is better off financially than you are, right? In order for them to afford your services. And then you, in turn, hire people who you can afford to hire. That's just kind of the way it goes. So, we're almost always serving a clientele that is not walking the exact same path through life as we are. So what happens is we can wind up projecting what we think is important to our ideal customer, but it's actually not. We're speaking the wrong lingo because we're speaking from our perspective and not theirs. And I think this is fundamentally it was my biggest challenge for sure, because I'm like, well, how the hell do I learn how to think and act and emotionally trigger affluent people? It wasn't my world, but you can learn it. Right. Same thing with a lot of, we were talking about lingos morphing before. Think about how many businesses that have been existing for years and their primary buyer now are millennials. Well, guess what? Millennials have a very different set of values than the baby boomers that business has been serving. So if you don't know the lingo of millennials, then you need to stretch. It's your work to get them. This is what a lot of business, it's not their work to get you. And a lot of businesses spend way too much time trying to convince people. If you want their business, it's your job to understand them, not the other way around. It's not their job as the customer to get you and be convinced by you. It's your job to understand their life values and priorities and speak their lingo if you want their business. So that was my biggest challenge then. I think it should always be a challenge in business. And I think it's probably the challenge of most people is because they really aren't walking the same path as their ideal customer, but they haven't done the work to understand their ideal customer's real essence yet.
And I really like that idea of it's not the customer's job to understand you, it's your job to position yourself in such a way and have that lingo set up where customers understand and are attracted to you as well. That's a really great insight, a big takeaway from this episode. So definitely remember that because it helps a lot when you're trying to create the lingo. It inspires you to invest that extra time towards crafting your brand, crafting how customers are going to see your brand and the language you use to communicate with them. And we've been talking about lingo throughout this episode. So that's one of the books we mentioned. I also mentioned Brick by Brick, but in addition to those books, Jeffrey, I'm wondering if you could share with us three great books that you believe will have a positive impact on us.
Oh my gosh, 3 books, huh? I read like 2 books a week, so I'm such an avid reader. I'm always on to the next book. So, one book that I absolutely love by Ian Shamandy, and the book is called "Why Should I Choose You?" Absolutely love this book. It's probably the only book I've ever read where I thought, "Damn, I wish I had written this," because to me that is the ultimate question. It ties in perfectly what we're just saying. Like, if you can't make it clear to your customer why they should choose you, then you're in trouble, right? So, I love the idea of that. Why should I choose you? Certainly, another classic and favorite book of mine is "Fascinate" by Sally Hogshead, especially the revised version. The original version was more a little more personal fascination. The revised version, released a couple of years ago, is about brand fascination. And what I love about the work of Sally Hogshead is that she's got the brand messaging idea down right, in that it is, when you're building a business, it's less about what you think of what you do. What really matters is how does the world see what you do? What does the world find fast? Because you can think of the greatest widget or, you know, app in the world, but if the world doesn't see the value in it, it won't sell. Right. And I have friends actually have developed 99-cent apps, spent thousands of dollars to develop an app for, and selling it for 99 cents and it didn't sell. It's like, well, it's because you thought it was going to be great, but the world doesn't think it is. Right? So I love the whole concept of how the world sees you. Gosh, that's two. Let me see, a third. So many good ones. All right. So the third would be one of my favorite books of all time, actually, by Todd Henry, who's also one of my favorite authors. And the book is called Louder Than Words. You'll see a theme here, right? I am, you know, I did write a book called Lingo. But what I love about Louder Than Words is what it's really saying, if I were to summarize the book, is what is louder than words is the energy behind the words. And if you really take that in, you'll understand more openly what I'm talking about with lingo, right? It's how people are interpreting what you're saying is bigger and more important than even the words themselves, especially when you're aligned to the right person. So I think Todd Henry in writing Louder Than Words was spot on. I actually emailed him halfway through the book and said, this might be one of the most important books of our time. Because of the way business has shifted, people are making decisions today on who to do business with and what brands to do business with based on a feeling of energy and how they feel about that business, whether they feel their values are aligned more than ever before. And we see the opposite, right? How many businesses are encountering huge problems right now because some level of transparency comes around and masses of people don't agree with the values of that company and they stop doing business with them, right? So the energy of the words is actually even more important than the words themselves. So those are the three books I would recommend.
Jeffrey, thank you for sharing those great book recommendations. Those will be in the show notes, markdeverde.com/E228. If you guys want a free book that will help you create, promote, and optimize your content for growth and revenue, you can grab your copy of Content Marketing Secrets. Just pay for the shipping at markdeverde.com/book. And before we wrap up this episode, Jeffrey, I've asked you several questions throughout our time together, but what do you believe is one question that we need to be asking ourselves more often?
One question. You know, it sounds so cliche with all we've talked about, but if everybody can walk away with this one thing, I think it'll be important, is who am I meant to serve, right? And I'm saying that a little differently than, you know, who's your ideal customer. In Lingo, the chapter about how to define your ideal customer is chapter two. And the title of that chapter is Who Will Love That? Right. So actually, let's make that the most important question people could ask right now. Who will love that? So that you're building a business for people that already value who you are and what you do, and you're not spending the rest of your business years chasing people and trying to convince them of anything. Build a business, speak in the lingo of your ideal customers, and you do that by understanding, well, you know who you are, what you have to offer. Who will love that? Most important question I think you can ask.
Jeffrey, thank you for sharing with us that great question and all of your great insights throughout our time together. Don't forget, Breakthrough Success listeners, to get Jeffrey's book, Lingo, where you will be able to discover your ideal customer's secret language and make your business irresistible. That book, again, will be in the show notes. But Jeffrey, I can't thank you enough for sharing all of your great insights with us today. It was such a pleasure to have you once again on Breakthrough Success.
Exactly. It's great to be back, Mark. Congratulations on all your success, putting out 228 episodes. That's just awesome. It's been 2 years for you. So proud to have known you and witnessed your journey. So thank you for having me back.
Thank you, Jeffrey. It was a pleasure to have you back. How does over 100 retweets per day sound to you? My free ebook, 27 Ways to Get More Retweets on Twitter, has you covered. I use the methods within this ebook to get over 10,000 retweets every single quarter. To learn